Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. Welcome to a special edition of It's Your Money, the show that's designed to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. And I have a very special guest, actually a couple special guests. I have a special guest, Mark Mattson, my personal coach and trainer, so to speak, my mental financial trainer, is here on his massive media tour promoting his new book and public broadcasting special, Main Street Money. And I'm fired up. He looks like he's a little wore out. I think New York might have worn him down. Huh, Mark?
That was a whirlwind. And we were there and, you know, hit Fox News and CNBC and did some interviews with investors on the street, which was very interesting to see, you know, how investors are feeling about the economy, about their portfolios, and how to protect their families and get empowered about their money going forward in life.
And I want to talk about the man on the street stuff when we get going. Just a quick and brief introduction. Obviously, you guys know me. I'm the investor coach here locally in Happy Valley. But Mark Mattson is actually my coach. So a lot of the content you've heard the last 5 years on It's Your Money in part is due to Mark's tutelage. Is that a good word? Tutelage. I like that word. And I'm so excited to have him here. He hasn't been to Happy Valley on my behalf before, and this is a great opportunity. Really appreciate you coming in, Mark.
It's great to be here.
The book is awesome. I know it's not out there. You'll only get it through public broadcasting. I've read two chapters shy of finishing it. I love it. I think it's great. I think it'll be a bestseller. But, you know, I'm not a literary giant by any means, but I'm guessing from a financial perspective, it's the best and most concise educational primer for finance that I've found. There was a recent book that I'm sure you're familiar with, Investment Answers, which was a very popular book, and that was probably the closest thing that I could find on the market that promotes an academic approach, but this book's going to trump that by a long shot.
Well, what I wanted to do in this book is really contrast for the Main Street investor the difference between Wall Street, the lies and the bullies that are out there, and then how you can better manage your money. Look, there are basically three types of Wall Street bullies. There's the con man. In that case, you think about the Madoff. These guys are the guys that end up eventually wearing orange jumpsuits, right? Uh-huh. And then there's the prognosticator, the Wall Street expert who tells you that they can know exactly what's going to happen with the economy, and based on that, they can forecast and predict which way the market's going to go. And the last one of those is the guru, the guy that tells you that he knows what the best stocks are in advance, and if you'll trust them and invest your money with them, then they're going to be able to beat the market by getting you all in the great stocks now, the bad stocks. And the reality is that if you believe these lies with your money, you are going to end up being a victim of Wall Street. And all but the blissfully naive of people should understand that Wall Street can't do any of those things. And the evidence is this, that 75% of all the active managers underperform the market, meaning they're not beating the market. Only 25% over a 10-year period beat the market, and statistically, those don't repeat into the future. So that's one just massive amount of evidence that stock picking doesn't work, and Wall Street's full of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then the other point is that Wall Street couldn't even manage their own business models. These guys didn't understand diversification. They didn't understand risk. They want a business. We're right here, Penn State. They want a business school. I guarantee you what they're teaching people is risk kills, that leverage kills your business. So they didn't understand leverage. They didn't understand the market. And so why should you ever trust them with your money?
Right, right. Well, let me ask you this, and we're working on some technical things. If it's a little low, just turn up your radio for now, ladies and gentlemen. But Mark, you know, I believe that, and I'm, you know, we've known each other for quite a while, and I have been sharing that message. But you know what a lot of people I notice, and I'm sure people are listening to the special and kind of now being exposed to Mattson for the first time, really, they're saying, well, wait a minute, that is the model. Why is it that you're the kind of the lone guy out there. You know, why is it that all of a sudden you figured it out and nobody else has figured it out before?
You know, well, it's actually pretty simple. Actually, I guarantee every single listener right now already knows the three prudent rules of investing. They're real simple. One is own equities. They are the greatest wealth creation tool on the planet. Number two is diversify. You don't want it all in one stock or even just in the United States. You want 45 different countries, 12,000 stocks globally. And then you want to rebalance by having a combination of fixed income, income. So when that market's crashed, you have money to rebalance and buy them when they're low. But, you know, it's kind of like a diet. There's only two simple rules to dieting, right?
I love this analogy. Yeah, this is a great analogy.
You and everybody knows the rules. You eat less and move more.
Right.
But the reality is that very few people can actually implement those rules. And if you're a listener out there, just ask yourself, you know, if you have a commitment to good health, do you wish you had eaten a little less over the last month? Do you wish that you had worked out a little bit more? So we know the rules, but when the cheesecake comes, it's hard to ignore. And when the market crashes, it's hard not to panic and go to cash. So the rules are simple. Wall Street doesn't want you to follow the rules because you're making them rich by avoiding those rules and speculating with your money. So,
I love that, and I don't know if people can hear me. We're working on this, but I'll speak loud. The diet analogy is great. And you know what I was thinking about when we were in Cincinnati talking about this recently was Hollywood. Why does Hollywood look so good? You know, and you think about dieting, it's a $7 billion industry. They look good because they're paying somebody to discipline them, right?
Right.
Ultimately,
right.
They're paying for coaching, physical coaching, whatever it is. But nobody pays for financial coaching because they think they're getting coaching, but it's really, according to the book and the idea of the bullies, is it's kind of, it's sales in disguise. Would that be kind of a layman's way to look at it?
Well, it's basically just all a sham. I mean, it is absolutely a sham. If you are believing the three lies, you can lose more money than you can ever possibly imagine. And you know, a lot of so-called financial experts talk about saving and make sure you don't spend and, you know, kind of like this scarcity mentality. But the reality is that if you don't prudently manage your money and you know how to create wealth long-term, it doesn't matter how much you save because you can destroy all of your wealth overnight by imprudently investing it. So,
well, it's interesting. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. But I saw the Antichrist of investing on the TV yesterday. That's i.e. Jim Cramer. And my wife looked at me and raised her eyebrow because she couldn't believe that this guy was talking about how good the market's done the last 5 years. When it was about 5 years ago, he was telling everybody to take money out of the market after, remember, like late November. And why is it that Americans have decided to go with the trust mantra rather than the science and understanding mantra?
Well, a couple reasons. Number one is that we're all human. And there's several things that really prohibit investors from being successful. And one is just a plain emotion. I mean, when you see the market crash, even if you try to be rational about it, you're having dinner in a restaurant or you're working out in the morning and you're looking up at the TV screens and you see the arrows crashing and you see the, you know, the prognosticators.
We're emotionally driven, right?
You're just emotionally sucked
sure.
into it.
Absolutely.
So most people in 2008 and 2009, they panicked and sold at the bottom. I was just doing a seminar last night, not two blocks from Wall Street, and we were talking about these same problems, the Wall Street bullies and the lies that they perpetrate on investors. And you would not believe the number of investors that came up to me and said, you know, I panicked in 2008, 2009, sold when it was low and have been long cash and haven't been back in the market. And the U.S. large stocks are up 100% since the bottom. Small stocks are up 118% since the bottom. And emerging market stocks are up over 130% since the bottom. And most investors missed it because they've been listening to Wall Street.
Well, and it's interesting. You're talking about people in Manhattan. I used to live in Jersey, and they would be considered that part of the country a little more knowledgeable than the average person as it relates to money and finance because Wall Street's there, the financial mecca, and so on. It's ironic that those people,
well, you know what? People always tell me, you know, well, I have $1 million. I have $2 million. I'm a sophisticated investor. You know, I got news for you. There are no sophisticated investors. The reality is, yeah, they may think they're sophisticated, but we have something called the 20 must answer questions. And it's a list of questions that you have to be able to answer before you even invest a dime of your money. Things like, can you measure the academic, scientific volatility of your portfolio? Do you know how each investment in your portfolio statistically relates to each other as far as risk? Do you know the expected return of your portfolio based on the historic market return of the asset categories? I mean, these are very basic questions. Essential questions
answers.
That every investor should know. But when I gave that quiz in Wall Street last night, the average score was probably 2 or 3.
You're a pin drop, right?
Well, and people are like, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't believe I thought I was sophisticated, and I can't even answer these basic questions.
Unbelievable. By the way, as it relates to questions, if you'd have a call, if I have a question, you can call 272-9700. We'll try to get you on the air, 272-9700. You know, with the few minutes we have in this first segment, I would like to kind of pimp the book, if I may, because I am big on it. And I love it. I think it's as soon as it's available, we're going to be getting, you know, a bunch of them. But what I'd like to focus in on is a little bit more about Mark the next few minutes. And if you would, weave a little bit in about your dad and your background. And at what point, I mean, it was like the scales fell off my eyeballs when I first met you and went out to the first training that we had, because I was doing everything the traditional way. I saw the light that week. When did you or your dad, Joe, because your dad comes from an insurance background, right?
Yeah.
And then into the financial business?
Yeah.
When did this come together for you? Maybe, because that was really the beginning part of this book's 25 years ago or whatever it was, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I always idolized my dad, and he was a financial planner. And he grew up in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, very, very poor. I mean, actually literally lived in a shack by the railroad track with dirt floors. That's how poor they were. And I always asked him, you know, when I was a little kid, I said, how did you get out of all that poverty? He said, well, it's a matter of asking the right questions. If I ask myself, why am I destined to be poor? Why am I destined to suffer? Why am I destined to work in a coal mine? My life would have came out one way. But I asked myself, how can I make the most of my skills? How can I make the most of my ability and help create wealth for other people and myself? And that led his life in a completely different direction. And
so he was trying to figure out how to get out of the situation.
Yeah, how to get out of this
not
destitute poverty. Yeah, not why I can't. And
right.
And you can be a very successful investor, but you have to start asking the right questions. The wrong questions are what stocks, when to get in out of the market, and who's
where's
the guru
gold?
That did it, what's gold going to do next.
Right.
And the right questions are where do returns really come from? And the returns come from the market, not the manager. And they are available to everybody. And the returns are amazing. I mean, a well-diversified portfolio over the last 20 years, or even over the last 10 years, should have actually doubled. While most people are so focused on the S&P, they get almost no real return on their money over the last 10 years.
Well, because they're watching the nightly news. But back to your dad, because you're going right back on message. You notice that, ladies and gentlemen? Mark is right back on message. As it relates to your dad, I've met your dad, spent a few times with him. Obviously a very sharp guy. You know, the influence that he had on you, and you write about it through the book, did he see the light before you did, or did you see the light?
Well,
what
happened was we were suffering. I mean, we were financial planners, had a brokerage firm stock, and we would recommend five-star mutual funds, and we bought into the whole scam that gurus could do this. And it was brutal having to meet with investors and explain why these five-star mutual funds that had a 20-year track record were underperforming the market.
That's
by
why I gave up on the market.
2 to 5%.
That's
why most people give up on investing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they hear, okay, buy tech stocks or buy gold or buy this. And then they watch their portfolios crash and they go, my gosh, I can't trust the market at all. And the shame of this whole thing is that most people have given up because of the bullies on America. They've given up on the stock market. They've given up investing because they think it's just a sham. The reality is, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Equities and markets, you can invest in them, you can achieve market rates of returns, but you just have to do some footwork and get a little bit educated. You have to get empowered to make the right decisions, and that's what the book's about.
Well, capitalism is alive and well in this country, in spite of some people that want to say that it's not. There's no question.
Yes, it is.
You know, entrepreneurism will find a way, right?
Yes, it will.
It always has. It always will. So for you, was your dad doing the stocks prior? Because you came into the practice after you got educated at Miami University, and then after that you went into your dad's practice,
yeah.
Right? And you had clients, and you were doing securities. Was he doing securities and mutual funds at that point?
He had actually started doing mutual funds in 1973.
Okay.
Way before I started the market.
Uh-huh.
But then we were doing our active funds, and I went to actually a convention in San Francisco, and he said, go find, you know, an answer to this problem. And I actually watched a debate between Rex Singfeld and Don Yachman, who was the best active manager at the time. And Rex made this beautiful argument that all the knowable and predictable information is already in the price today. Therefore, only unknowable and unpredictable information will change prices going forward. And that markets were extremely efficient. And that was my personal
flashpoint.
That
was like a light bulb, right?
That was my flashpoint.
Yeah.
I knew why everything we had been doing wasn't working. I knew why everything that Wall Street was telling me was wrong. Look. Let's face facts. If Fidelity or American Funds or Janus or any of these mutual fund complexes knew who their best manager was going to be in advance, how many managers would they need? They wouldn't need 100 to 200 mutual funds.
Yeah, just one.
They don't even know who the next best manager is going to be. And if Wall Street knew when to get in and out of the market and what all the best stocks to buy, do you think they would tell you? You know, as an investor, you should be out there being extremely skeptical, because if they did know these things, they sure as heck wouldn't tell you. They'd be keeping all that information for themselves, making 30, 40, 50% per year. So it's
was
just
that
a lie.
Was that an epiphany, Mark, that you had, that you started? And I heard that speech, by the way. I mean, that debate, it was a rough recording. You used to have it. I got it from you.
Yeah,
in fact.
I still have it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful recording, but a debate. But was it at that point that you realized it's not about the managers, it's really about the market?
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, that was kind of the distinction. Because before, as an advisor, registered investment advisor, we're sold that it's not about the market.
Right. That's
we're
right.
We're sold that it's about the manager.
And it was more, it was less of an epiphany. It was really more of a sick feeling in my stomach because I knew what I had been doing was wrong and I knew I had to change it. And I knew that there wasn't any real business model to actually go out there and help everyday investors achieve these awesome market returns.
Yes, I agree with you. In fact, I had given up on the market prior to meeting you because I tried everything they said, and just from my own experience, I realized what they were propagating wasn't working. So I said, forget it. I'm just not going to put my clients in securities. And then when I decided to make this jump into an academic model, I had to come back and apologize.
Mea culpa, you know.
And it wasn't easy.
And make amends.
And, you know, but, you know, we had to do the right thing. And the right thing was I was tired of losing sleep over the market. I don't even think about it anymore. It doesn't even cross my mind. I mean, you know, they talked about the efficient market doesn't work in 2008. How stupid is that kind of statement? It did exactly what it was supposed to do.
It did. It adjusted to all the information. And the other thing that people are talking about is the decade of 2000 to 2010, they were calling a dead decade. The only reason they're calling it that is because most people are so myopically focused just on the S&P, and the S&P didn't make anything for that 10-year period. But if you had invested in emerging market stocks, you were up 13% per year during that period of time. If you had bought microcap stocks in the United States, you were up over 9% per year during that period. And if you were in small value stocks, you were up over 12% per year during that period. So it was not, I can't tell you the number of times I've been on CNBC or Fox Business where they call it a dead decade, and I have to correct them, because even equities, even though that was a very volatile period of time, if you had been properly diversified, you could have easily doubled your money over that period. It was not a dead decade. And so many investors, so many of our listeners, I'm sure, have been so scared by these doomsday people, and people maybe marketing products, selling annuities or selling these products with high commissions, and they've been afraid of the market. And it's been just a terrible mistake, because they rode the market down, they panicked, and they haven't gotten the market rebalanced.
So really, the message you just shared was the whole idea of diversification, and the fact that, and I'll just spit it out in a different way for those that are more layman. Most people, when you look at, we do an MRI on their portfolio, and Mark has created an incredible MRI that we can do on a portfolio. What we find is about 50% of it's always in U.S. large.
Yep.
And I've always wondered, why is it a patriotic thing or whatever? And I figured out it was more the bid-ask spread and fees associated with it. But what happens is, when people see the nightly news, they see the Dow Jones or they see the S&P 500, that's only representative of U.S. large. So your portfolio shouldn't be running lockstep with that. And it doesn't really matter what the S&P did, to your point, because other parts of the market did well. What's the challenge is not being in the other parts of the market, and the fact that the market chases what's up is what you're saying, right?
That's the other problem. Not only do investors
diversification.
Panic, yeah, no. Not only do people panic when it goes down and they aren't properly diversified. What happens when something gets hot? Like tech stocks, when they got super hot and people thought, wow, this is a new paradigm. This is only going to go up. I met with a man, a brilliant guy, literally a neurosurgeon, a brain surgeon, who had his whole life savings, $3 million in tech stocks, and lost 80% of it when the market crashed. So you can easily, by chasing hot sectors, you know, gold is a current one right now.
Scary. Gold is scary, in my opinion.
If you look at history, gold has a rate of return of about 4% with the volatility that's greater than owning equities. And there are periods when I first started in the business where gold lost money for 20 years in a row, and people are putting huge amounts of their retirement, huge amount of their savings, thinking it's a safe haven. that is just purely chasing hot returns.
Well, you know what gets me on the gold? The marketing has gotten more sophisticated and better as they've gotten more money. And, you know, I think of one of the particular ads. It says, buy gold. It's never been worth nothing. When has the market ever been worth nothing?
Yeah, no.
I mean, you know, it's just it's really good marketing is what.
Well, and they try to twist it. They call equities paper money, as if you don't actually own the companies and the research and the
gold certificates aren't paper.
Yeah, like gold certificates, and you know, and like these businesses, you know, all across the country aren't valuable. So it's very unfortunate, but they're duping a lot of people into doing it.
Well, and it's the ignorance, and I don't mean that in a bad way, of Americans to be duped like this. And you can't feel bad about being ignorant about this kind of stuff. That's why Mark has his book and the special, and we do the coaching and all the stuff that we do, because the industry is very shrewd. It's very lucrative. They spend a tremendous amount of money on marketing. I got a little taste of the whole media thing and how that works, right? PR and kind of through this whole stuff. And it's very it's very well done. They know what they're doing.
Well, they spend billions to create the illusion that they know what you should do and you should trust them. And the reality is, if you look into prospectus, it says past performance is not indicative of future results, is no guarantee. And that's basically an admission of their guilt that, you know, these managers get lucky over a brief period of time. You think they're hot, you invest in them, and then you get killed.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did your dad, when you came back from the Yakman-Singfeld debate, did you kind of say, Dad, look, I think we're missing it here? Or did what happened there?
Well, that was kind of, you know, back then, you know, he hadn't really been up to speed on that whole conversation. So when I came back, from the conference, I felt a little bit like Jack and the Beanstalk with the magic beans. It was kind of like, he was like, what? You know?
He thought it was youthful exuberance.
Yeah, well,
point,
yeah.
Right?
And very quickly, though, he's actually, when I showed him the research, you know, he was on board. And then within a very short period of time, we helped our local clients in Cincinnati, right here in the Midwest here, with the first $50 million under management, and then started working with advisors all over the country. And now there's $3.2 billion. With investors all over the place. And that's why I wrote the book. I wanted to share this message and help arm you against Wall Street and show you that the market is an amazing place to invest long term, but we have to show you how to do it right.
Well, I did an interview Monday morning promoting the show, and the interviewer asked me, he said, what can the listeners expect? And I said, I think the main thing they can expect is hopefully a restored view of the market. The market has not done poorly. I know there's a lot of doom and gloom with the election cycles, and it seems like we haven't been out of an election cycle in the last 12 years, but, you know, doom and gloom, it sells, and abundance doesn't. You know, but abundance is the key. It's thinking differently, right?
Well, yeah, and there is a lot of doom and gloom, and part of the book is actually showing people how wealth is created and how markets work so they can get that hope back again. I mean, everything is a doomsday scenario right now. Massive federal spending, inflation, death of the dollar, Europe's going to crash, and the market's going to follow it. You know, paper. And so what's happening is people are pretending as if things have never been bad before.
Right.
We've been through much worse times before. We've been through much worse depressions. We've been through much worse wars. I mean, World War II, and the market was extremely good in that 10-year period. Even in World War II with the Holocaust and three-quarters of the industrial complex of the world being destroyed. I mean, today, you know, if we don't have the third flat-screen TV, you know, we think we're unhappy. You know, everybody's running around with cell phones. There's massive amounts of prosperity everywhere you look, but people just don't want to see it.
It's amazing to me because, you know, the economy, there's signs around it that it's picking up in spite of some of the policies that are stopping it from picking up, which I find to be very interesting. And it just goes to show that free enterprise is alive and well. Capitalism works. You know, it's just that people are starting, I think, to doubt because you're right of the doom and gloom. And it's a lack of information. It's not a lack of, let me rephrase that. It's not a lack of information, Mark. It's a lack of clarity.
Yeah, it's actually too much of the wrong kind of information.
Right. TMI, my daughter.
Yeah, and it is, you know, there are a lot of challenges right now. You know, we do have massive deficit. We have taxes that could be going increasing. There's a lot of interference with government. You have a massive expansion, 40 cents on every dollar right now that we use in the United States is borrowed. So that clearly is not sustainable long term. But and people look at that and say, wow, this socialism, this government that's growing is going to stifle the market long term. The reality is, though, if you look at Europe, for example, who is much further down this track than we are, they have actually had 1% additional rate of return historically over the last 30 years than America. And it's because risk and return are related. Yes, socialism, deficits, all these things are risk factors, but the market's extremely good at pricing that in, and it actually has potential to raise rates of returns. Bad for America, not necessarily bad for the market.
Awesome. Boy, this is good stuff. I hope you're enjoying this special broadcast of It's Your Money. We are live and in color from the Corner Room, downtown State College here in Happy Valley with Mark Mattson.